Fancy a game?
We don't want your fancy life-changing career starting moving out of my parents' house college education.
Oh, man.
What? How embarrassing was that for us?
Oh, my God, was it embarrassing.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, vegan Tony Sanchez. That was a good answer yesterday. I enjoyed that. If you missed it, I asked Tony Sanchez if he'd give up his favorite food, just pasta slash steak. Not at the same time, two separate things. You had a tie for first. Pasta slash steak. It's like when you have co-starting quarterbacks. You put an or on the depth chart. He's got an or next to his favorite food. Asked him if he'd give up his favorite food for a season of health for Armani Rodgers, and he said he'd become a vegan. That was good. I wonder, like, what other harmless, like, deals would coaches make? Like, obviously, they'd all pick to go undefeated. You can't pick that. But, like, you know, all your punts are downed inside the one-yard line. But you have to take public transportation every day.
Yeah. I mean, I think most coaches are the kind of psychopaths that only are thinking about, like, how do we win? Could we win? I'd like to win. So any competitive advantage, they'd be like,
I have to walk to work? Okay.
Yeah.
We'll complete one percentage point more of our passes this year? Deal.
Okay. I have to sleep in my office, no mattress. All right.
I can do that anyway.
Yeah.
No problem. We have UNLV hoops to get to. Fun stats on Noah Robotham. They're actually fun, too. Normally I say fun stat and people get
and
mad.
And you depress the crap out of me.
They're sad stats. They're actually fun. We're going to give away some Lights FC tickets next week.
We're
going to try to have some fun with it. Eric Winaldo will be in studio, so we'll kind of figure out what we're doing with that. We're also going to try to help Mark Davis.
I thought we had a plan.
We do have a plan, but I like to take your plans and not pay attention to them. But we start
That's
with the
fair.
Golden Knights. First off, breaking news. Literally breaking news. This just came out in a press release. The Golden Knights have sent Max Legacé back to the Chicago Wolves. So Malcolm Subban is back.
So Malcolm Subban will warm up and never get to take the
ice. Yes. Malcolm Subban is back to sit on the bench. Max Legacé actually played in a game. They lost, but he played. Malcolm Subban's back. Hooray. Now you're waiting on Will Carrier. He's the one that is still on IR. And Nick Holden. But I'm not waiting on Nick Holden because I don't want him to ever come back because that means Jake Bischoff gets sent to the minor leagues. But Will Carrier, whenever he comes back, the Golden Knights will have to make a roster decision or somebody else will be hurt and you put him on IR. But the Golden Knights beat Detroit last night 4-3. I feel like beating the Red Wings is like when UNLV beat San Jose State. It's a bad team. It's an asterisk win. It's not a real win. That's what that was. Like, and they tried to give Detroit a win too. Like Fleury just left the puck under him in the first period and Nyquist came in and grabbed it and scored. Like Fleury thought he saved it and the puck's just sitting under him and free goal for Detroit. The Golden Knights had 4 shots on goal in the first period, by the way. That's not good against a very bad team. And they gave up like 900 high-danger scoring chances in the final minute. And they gave them a goal with 2 seconds to go, too. Should have been 4-2. So they didn't play all that well. But they beat Detroit because Detroit's bad. It's just like when UNLV beat San Jose State. That's all it is. Just a bad team. More important part of that game, though, is the first line got put back together. Riley Smith was reunited with William Karlsson and Jonathan Marchessault, just like I told Gerard Gallant to do. Definitely, I'm taking credit for that. That happened about in the middle of the second period, and they produced a 5-on-5 goal together. Marchessault did have a power play goal. William Karlsson scored with Paul Stastny in a 2-on-1 that came right off a penalty kill. So they had a lot of points total, but those three, they only had 1 5-on-5 goal together. The bigger number, though, than any of the goals, and again, maybe there's an asterisk next to this because it's Detroit, but Marchessault, Smith, and Karlsson played 5 minutes and 34 seconds together at 5-on-5. They produced 5 high-danger scoring chances and allowed 1. If you were to take that and do it by a per 60-minute basis, that works out to 54.5 high-danger chances per 60 minutes. The team in the NHL with the most high danger chances per 60 minutes is Carolina. They're at 13.8. So a pace of 54.5 per 60 minutes compared to the league leaders at 14 per 60 minutes. That's pretty good. Pretty solid. Again, it was 5.5 minutes. It was against Detroit. a lot of asterisks you can throw in there. You can say it's not that remarkable, but that's what the first line should be for the Golden Knights. If they're going to be at their best, it's Riley Smith, William Karlsson, Jonathan Marsh. That's the first line. Leave them. I mean, sure, you can shake stuff up in the regular season, but there's no need to try, you know, Valentin Zhiekhoff on the top line. That's your first line. Yes, they'll have moments where they're not very good for stretches, but just deal with it. Just figure it out. And that brings you to what the third line should be, and it's what, you know, I've talked about a little bit. Your options, you got Cody Eakin, Tomáš Nosek, Ryan Carpenter, Oscar Lindberg, Brandon Perry, Valentin Zhiekhoff. You got to find some combo of those three that works. Somebody's probably getting waived out of that group, too, at some point. But you've probably got to find some combo of those three that worked. I don't know what it is. I mean, I tend to like the offensive upside, the offensive options of Perry and Zhiekhoff more than anybody else on there, but who knows? You might just be better off going the, hey, what's the least amount of damage we can do? So let's just put the safest lineup out there for the third line, and that would, you know, be like Eakin, Noshik, and Carpenter or something like that, which is not exciting at all, but might be the safest choice. I don't know. You would like to think you can find something with Brandon Peary or Valentin Zhiekhoff to give you some scoring on that third line, but I don't know that it's going to happen in terms of, like, anything significant. You might get an extra goal or something by playing those guys down there, but, like, Brandon Peary is getting healthy scratched out because he can't score because he's a con man. But that's where you're at with the third line.
It still makes me happy, though.
That he pulled this con off.
That the overwhelming majority of Golden Knights fans were up in arms including you, that were just like, you can't send him down, you can't send him down, and now it's like he's a pumpkin.
Yep, that's a good way to phrase it. He's a pumpkin. Possibly George McPhee could make a trade that gives him a better option for the third line. Fun fact. And this is a stat from Jesse Granger.
Wait, is this one actually fun?
It's neutral.
okay.
George McPhee has made an in-season trade for 18 straight years. Obviously had a break in there where he wasn't a general manager. But 18 straight seasons, he's made an in-season trade. Technically, he's already made one this year. Shipped Brad Hunt off and got nothing in return.
He moved up.
Yeah, whole 36
minutes. In the NHL draft.
So the trade deadline is February 25th. And I really hope the Golden Knights make a move or two or seven. Jesse wrote a story for The Athletic, and he goes into good detail on, like, the salary cap situation, the upcoming free agency for guys like William Karlsson, Pierre-Edouard Belmar, and others. But the quote in there that's interesting, the one that sort of makes you think the Golden Knights are not going to make any sort of big splashy deal, is from Bill Foley. And he said this: you know, we gave up a number one last year, and McPhee is really committed to keeping that number one this year. It's a pretty good draft class. So the Golden Knights traded a first, second, and third round pick to Detroit for Tomáš Tatar last year. They did not get to draft in the first round of this past NHL draft. And according to that quote from Bill Foley, it sounds like their number one pick this year is not on the table. And that would probably prevent them from making a big move. I would hope, though, like, I don't like the idea of our number one pick's not on the table. Not a fan of that, like, mindset. Like, if there is a good trade out there, and I would assume George McPhee feels the same way, but if there's a good trade out there and the cost is your number one pick, you still make it. Like, you don't say, hey, we didn't have our first round pick last year, so we've got to draft a kid that won't play for 4 years this year.
Especially considering let's overcook them is the mindset.
Yes.
I mean, what you gave the numbers a couple weeks back, and I don't remember them at all, but what's the difference between a first and a second round pick?
It is. So the percentage in Charting Hockey, Sean Tierney on Twitter is the one that has this graph. The first 20 picks in the NHL draft have value, but then about pick 21 in the first round,
which
I think the Golden Knights right now would be 19th. I'll have to double check that.
Okay. So if they keep winning,
yes, if they get better, they'll be outside the top 20. But right around where the Golden Knights will be picking is where the chances of that guy making the NHL pretty much plummets. and you essentially, the difference between the first round pick and like the 18th round pick is bigger in terms of chances to make the NHL than the difference between the like 21st pick in the first round and any pick in the 7th round.
All right.
So like it's like a
just trade the pick if you got a good deal.
Is how I feel. Now, you don't need to trade it just to trade it, but I don't like the idea of we can't trade it because we traded last year's first round pick. Because again, it's not even that valuable pick. Like if they were top 5 and you were like, we love, you know, 6 guys in this draft, they're all great, then yeah, okay. I can see you not trading it, but 19th, who cares? The other scenarios that Jesse lays out that are fun. Trading defensemen, specifically current NHL defensemen, like Shea Theodore or Colin Miller, which I feel like would be a pretty big shock to Golden Knights fans. Because you'd be trading guys that are on the current roster that are good and like, oh, that's my favorite player. Oh, and you traded him. What the hell? But you would only do that. Here's the thing. You would only trade, you know, Colin Miller or Shea Theodore if you believe in Eric Brandstrom, Jake Bischoff, Nick Hague, any of those three defensemen, or Zach Whitecloud. Like, if they believe in one or two of those four defensemen to step in and play in the playoffs this year, because that's potentially what you're setting yourself up for, if you'd be one injury away at that point, then you could make one of those trades. Like, if you thought, hey, we need to get somebody better for our third line, let's trade Colin Miller and get somebody in here that's basically a top 6 forward and put him on the third line. Like, you could make that trade. The thing is, and we've talked about it before, does anybody know if Bischoff, Brandstrom, Hague, Whitecloud are any good at the NHL level? No, because they haven't played. Like, all four of those guys could have gotten game time this year, and we could have gotten some idea of what they are at the NHL level, but we just haven't seen it. So, I don't know. The other thing with, if you look long-term, which I do for Jake Bischoff to try to figure out his path to the NHL, Vegas is pretty committed to, I guess we can call them the Big Four as far as their defensemen. Shea Theodore and Nate Schmidt are both signed on for 6 more seasons after this one ends. And then Colin Miller and Braden McNabb are signed on for 3 more after this year ends. So they're committed to those four. Like, they've given them all deals that are pretty big and pretty long. You have Nick Holden and John Merrill, who are both have 1 year left after this season. And then Derek Engelin is a free agent after this year. The path for Jake Bischoff to, like, get into the lineup, or Eric Brandstrom, or any of these defensemen, it's not that great unless there is a trade.
How old is Derek Englund?
Approximately 74.
At what point do you give him the Dirk Nowitzki, Dwayne Wade deal of...
Those guys are still playing. You don't want that. You want him to retire.
No, okay, yeah, but the... this is your last year, and now you're going to be the vice president of shaking hands with season ticket holders.
Right. He's only 36, which...
Oh, okay. Well,
he's got 5 more years in him. He just seems old because... What is Paul Stastny the second oldest guy, and he's like 32 or something like that? And then everybody else on this team is 28 years old. Like, the entire roster is 28. But that's if Derek Engelin comes back, the path for one of those young defensemen to get to the NHL is slim to none.
I just don't know why you wouldn't try to make him an ambassador.
They should. But, like, the path for one of these young guys to come back, even when Engelin retires, you've still got 6 defensemen that are in your way.
Yeah.
And you've got to, you know... They only want to carry 7, so there's only one other defenseman spot. And again, they could trade some of these guys, and that makes it much more likely that Jake Bischoff or an Eric Brandstrom makes it to the NHL.
Hockey novice question.
No Velcro.
Oh, no, but we've already handled Velcro, and everyone universally decided it was a good idea. Are there, like, stretch fours in hockey? Like, are there, like, he's a defenseman, but we could slot him over?
They would more often. That would be so much more fun.
Okay.
Because, like, you could just throw Shea Theodore on the wing. We're like, how do you fix the third line? Put Shea Theodore up there. It'd be way more fun.
Okay.
Way more interesting. But no, it doesn't really happen, unfortunately. It would be great.
Again, hockey novice, so it's like I understand, like, forward, center, defenseman.
Listen, hockey is very far behind. We're in this positionless era of basketball. So give it about 20 years and we'll have positionless hockey.
Ooh.
That's when they'll catch on. They'll be like, oh, we can have guys do different jobs. They can play multiple positions. This is ridiculous. Whoever thought of this? Oh, basketball did it 4 decades ago? Oh, well. Technically correct. Make sure you have the BeConnected Sports app downloaded. It is the easy-to-use app that lets you bet before and in-game while you watch. It's the BeConnected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Braden McNabb scored his second goal of the season.
Stole it from Oscar Lindberg. Actually, Oscar Lindberg tried to steal it from him. But that was a great play by Braden McNabb. He stole a pass in the defensive zone, skated all the way down the ice. By the way, Detroit was trying to set up a set play, and Braden McNabb picked it off, and then took it all the way down the ice and scored. Like, what the hell? Who's that man? That is not Braden McNabb. He doesn't do that. Poor Oscar Lindberg. He thought he scored. Thought he deflated. Like, that's always the sign you look for when there's a puck that possibly gets deflected and goes in the net, is you watch the celebrations to see who scored it. Oscar Lindberg did not touch that puck, but he celebrated like he scored. Great. He's trying to be a bigger con man than Brandon Peary. That's what he's doing. He's like, yeah, give me credit for that goal. I replaced Brandon Peary. Now I can score. But no, it's Braden McNabb. Look at Oscar Lindberg. All McNabb. I still can't believe Braden McNabb made that play. It's incredible.
Mbaki Zhang started at center for UNLV against Boise State.
It was his first start since the Christmas Day loss to Bucknell. Push Nick Blair out of the starting lineup. So this is what the rotation kind of looks like for UNLV. And Mbaki Zhang starts at center. Jonathan Chamwechachua is the backup center. And that's your center rotation, barring some significant foul trouble or an injury. Tomboy is the power forward. Nick Blair's the backup power forward. Turbo Beck, by the way, did not play against Boise State. Didn't see the floor at all. So Tomboy, your starting power forward. Nick Blair, your backup power forward. And then as far as the perimeter goes, you've got Hardy Robotham Clyburn. And based on that last game, Bryce Hamilton is the primary wing slash guard off the bench. And, you know, Trey Woodbury played a few minutes, but that was it. So it's pretty much Hamilton's the fourth man. You might see a little bit of Woodbury. You might see a little bit of Marvin Coleman. But that's pretty much it. And
Coleman's the defensive specialist.
Apparently. I like it, though. Like, that's how I think it should be. Like, that's, I think, what gives them their best chance to win, is playing those four guys on the perimeter. Tomboy and Blair are your power forward options, and Zhang and JTT are your center options. And you want to play Zhang as much as you can. He'll get in foul trouble a lot, so you're going to have to put in JTT a lot of times. And I would like to play Tomboy as much as you can. And then the four wings, I think you can mix Hamilton in there more than they usually do. But I think that gives them their best chance to win. Obviously, for the future, you'd like to see Hamilton play a little bit more just because he's going to be on the team next year and Clyburn and Robotham aren't. But as far as winning games this year, that's your best chance.
Chris Clyburn is averaging 18 points per game over the last four games.
And he's taking 15 shots per game as well. He's sort of become a high-volume guy you can count on to score. He does need his teammates' help. Like, he's usually the top beneficiary of Hardy or Robotham driving in. Like, whether he gets an open three and he's hitting, I think he's at 39% in Mountain West play right now. He's hitting threes off of that, and he's also driving in, and he does, you know, the backdoor cut we talked about yesterday that somehow nobody in this conference is like, oh, he's going to do that. We should stop that. He has been better about driving on his own. Getting into the lane, it's something he didn't really do a whole lot until this year. He's done it more. Actually, he did it twice in a row against Boise State. Got a layup, and the second time he got it swatted. So, 1 for 2. All right, we'll take it. But when Hardy and Robotham are driving and drawing out, Clyburn's making it worthwhile for them to pass out and being pretty efficient out there. It's mainly, I just bring it up because Clyburn started out this season well, and I was like, all right, we've seen him do this for stretches of 5-6 games at a time, but it always falls off. It hasn't this year. He's been a solid point contributor for UNLV all season. A lot of it has to do with his minutes. He and Robotham have a consistent amount of minutes they're going to play. Like, those guys are pretty insulated as far as they're not going to come out of the game for long stretches of time. So that does help him continue to score, but he's been consistent.
He also has that play.
Yes, that one play that works every time. We know there's one play UNLV will score on every game.
It's the Tom Brady QB sneak.
Can't stop it.
No one's figured it out.
Lexington Thomas was not invited to the NFL Combine.
Sad. It's also a little confusing.
Is it?
I mean, some of the people that were invited to the NFL Combine.
I mean, they only invited 28 running backs. So it's not like there's a lot of running backs that got invited. More than likely, Lexington Thomas is going to have to make an NFL team as an undrafted free agent. That's probably where he's going to be. He could have a role. See him as a pass-catching back, third-down back. You could see him as a return man. The problem, though, is those are just things he never did at UNLV.
Didn't ask him to.
Yeah, they didn't. I think he returned, one punt this year? That was it.
I think at that point they were also just like, somebody get back there and just fall on the ball.
Don't fumble it. They used him exclusively as a running back. Hey, we're going to hand you the ball. They didn't even really throw to him a lot. They tried to incorporate him more when Max Gillum became the quarterback for half the season, but even then it was still limited in how much they threw to Lexington Thomas. So, like, he might be really good at those things. We just haven't seen it. Like, I have no idea. He could be terrible at them, too. I don't know. He just didn't get a lot of chance to see him. Will he be on the San Diego fleet next year?
I mean, that or the Atlanta Hotshots. Those seem to be the two, they treat UNLV as like a player mill.
UNLV has introduced the Faithful Fan Pricing Ticket Plan.
All right, so these are season tickets.
Was that meant to rhyme?
Faithful Fan Pricing Ticket Plan? I don't know. Good writing on my part, huh? So if you get season tickets in 2019, so this year at Sam Boyd, you will be able to get season tickets for 2020 next year at the Raider Stadium for the same price.
I mean, that sounds reasonable.
Cheapest season ticket is $99. So you can buy two $99 season tickets this year, and then you get that same price next year. But I should note it, it's a per-game price. So they have 6 home games this year. They have 7 home games in 2020, so your price will be more than $99. But on a per-game basis, it's still $16 a game. So it's a per-game price that's the same, not the total price there. But it seems like a pretty good deal. It seems like a pretty good enticement to get people to buy 2019 season tickets. My thought process on it, though, is when UNLV moves into the new stadium, are they going to be able to charge more? Like, are people going to want to pay more just because they're in a new
stadium? Probably
not. Like if they go to a bowl game this year, then, hey, look, the team went to a bowl game. Armani Rogers is a senior quarterback. Like, you'll have stuff to sell in terms of the program being good. But just, like, the idea of this ticket plan is based on we're going into a new stadium, we're going to raise ticket prices, but lock in your price now. And I'm not so convinced they'll actually be able to sell tickets at a high... Like, I don't think people are going to be that more enticed to go watch UNLV football just because they're in a new stadium.
I think they may get one extra, like, person. Like, one person will be like, oh, I haven't been to the new stadium yet.
Yeah, and I think that'll happen every now and then, but I don't know. I just don't feel like they're going to be able to go from...
I certainly don't want to watch the Raiders.
Yeah. Like, I just don't... It doesn't feel like they're going to be able to go from our cheapest ticket is $99 to our cheapest season ticket is $215.
Yeah, good luck.
Like, right. Like, they'll be able to increase the prices a little bit, but, like, I'm thinking, like, a 10% increase. The other thing, though, is with the stadium, because UNLV, while the demand I don't think is going to cause them to rise their ticket prices... They're probably going to have to raise them because their operating costs are going up. I can't remember the exact numbers. I believe their operating cost at Sam Boyd Stadium is $75,000 a game. When they move into this new stadium, they don't have to pay rent, but they have to pay game day operating costs. So, like, the electric bill on game day, that type of stuff. The estimation for UNLV game day is between $150,000 and $250,000. So their game day operating costs are double or tripling moving into the stadium. So they might be forced to raise ticket prices just because they've got double or triple the expenses that they're used to having.
The only thing I can think of is TV rights, and the only problem with that is your TV rights are currently owned by the Mountain West Network.
Yeah, I mean, so you're locked into that for a couple screwed. Years, and then the Mountain West is considering cutting the cord and doing a digital-only thing, which would give them basically no money.
Yep. Jesus.
UNLV's recruiting class ranked 9th in the Mountain West.
Yep,
that so they went the wrong direction.
Yeah, they fell down.
They fell down.
They were 8th, they jumped up to 7th, and now they fell back to 9th.
Colin Miller.
UNLV also had 11 three-star recruits, which was tied with San Jose State for the fewest in the Mountain West. So not ideal. But I'll give you an optimistic and a pessimistic look at this. The optimistic look is UNLV finally has depth. Tony Sanchez has lamented not having depth every year. This year, they should finally have the depth that he's wanted. They should finally not have to move guys to the other side of the ball just because they have a few injuries. Also, the optimistic side is they got a bunch of JUCO defensive players. You hope those guys step in and are good right away, whereas some of these other classes, they got a bunch of freshmen. They can't play right away. The pessimistic view, UNLV's probably been the 9th best program since Tony Sanchez took over, and they got the 9th best recruiting class. So it's status quo. You're not getting better. You're not getting worse. You're just going to be the 9th best program again. One interesting note on recruiting. Bill Connolly of Football Study Hall, he compiles his own weighted four-year average for recruiting rankings. So UNLV's four-year average, they're 107th in the country and 9th best in the Mountain West. New Mexico, Air Force, San Jose State are worse. So this class isn't really an improvement over previous Tony Sanchez classes either. The only thing is it's more defense and more JUCO focused than usual.
Yay!
Fun facts.
We gotta start reversing how you do these. Start with the pessimism and then bring us back.
Would that be better?
Would
that be better for you? Okay, I apologize.
Oh, screw it. Eric Winalda is trying to convince Steve Nash to play for Lights FC.
So Winalda tweeted at Steve Nash yesterday, "Would you entertain the idea of playing for Lights FC? That way you can actually say that you were a two-sport pro. I have no doubt you can. It's just a matter of if you would."
And my favorite thing that happened next was someone went, "Is this tampering?" And Eric Winalda went, "Yes. Yes, it is."
Steve Nash, he actually does studio. He's like a studio analyst, like halftime studio analyst for Champions League, which Turner got the rights to it, and they put it on like Bleacher Report Live, so it's a pain. But he's like a studio analyst, so like occasionally if you're watching Champions League, they put like one game on actual TV, you'll see Steve Nash, and like, Steve Nash, he didn't play this sport, but he could. He'd be the most famous player in the USL.
It also, legitimately, from what I understand, he could have played.
Yeah, supposedly he's actually good at the sport. He is 45, though.
I mean, how long did Pele play?
Payway? Is that what you called him? Sounded like Payway.
The editor of Off-Road Magazine. No, how long, like, isn't soccer kind of like hockey? Like, random people play until they're in their 70s?
Well, there's enough leagues. There's enough lower leagues that, yeah, you can if you're really good, you can play when you're older in some lower leagues.
I mean, Julio Franco played baseball until he was, like, 90.
So, yeah, conceivably, the USL isn't that great. Steve Nash could be their best player.
Sean Miller of Arizona addressed Mark Phelps' firing and is considered on the hot seat. I wanted to...
What did he say about it?
Wait, oh, hold on. But you can't ask me questions.
Have you ever wondered what it looks like?
Ah, come on, man. No, I wanted your opinion on this. Like, this whole... I mean, we playfully say Marvin Minzy should cheat more. And now we're watching...
Everyone should cheat more.
Well, okay, yes. But now we're watching Sean Miller sort of...
Has he gotten in trouble yet?
Well, it's very strange because he vehemently denied it and now people around him are getting fired, so...
He's fine.
Really? Because I thought the whole concept was like the head coach shouldn't, like, even if you didn't know, you should have known because you're responsible.
But what's happened to him so far? Nothing really. I mean, he's had uncomfortable press conferences, right? He's had to answer questions. But, like, what so far with the NCAA and this whole FBI thing, you've had some assistant coaches get arrested, and you've had players been told, hey, you can't play. Nothing's happened to a school, and nothing's happened to a head coach yet. So this seems like a good lesson, and yes, you should cheat. Like, you're not going to get in trouble. Just make sure other people get in trouble.
Just literally any time the assistant coaches are like, hey, I need to run something by you, just put your fingers in your ears and go, nah, nah, nah,
nope.
nah.
Nope. Yeah, no. Yeah, I think this is a good example of cheating.
All right.
Why you should cheat. If you ever wonder what it looks like inside Bischoff's briefs, thanks to Manscaped.com, it looks phenomenal. Manscaped's precision engineered tools are optimized specifically for below-the-waist grooming and hygiene. I love their Lawnmower 2.0 trimmer with skin-safe ceramic blades. A nick-free manscaping experience every time. So keep the inside of your briefs like Bischoff's briefs. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with discount code ESPN. That's code ESPN for 20% off and free shipping.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
There's no I in team. Yeah, there's no you either. So I guess if I'm not on the team and you're not on the team, nobody's on the goddamn team. The team sucks.
It's Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
UNLV plays Fresno State tomorrow. Wednesday, on Wednesday's pregame / extended Cofield and Company, I was with Adam Hill, and Adam asked me a question
about the Duluth Eskimos.
Yes, we did talk a lot about the Duluth Eskimos. But Adam asked me about who is the most important player to UNLV playing well. And I answered Amori Hardy. And in that game, when he started playing better, UNLV did play better. But the real answer is Noah Robotham. These are your fun facts. Mountain West play, when Robotham scores 10 or more points, they're 5-0. When he doesn't, they're 1-4. For the entire season, 8-1 when he scores 10 or more, 4-9 when he's under 10. On the assist side, when he has 8 or more assists, they're 4-0. When he has 0 or 1 assist, they're 0-3. One more for you. When he hits threes, 3 or more threes in a game, UNLV is 7-0. When he does not make a 3, they're 0-3.
So what you're saying is that the offense runs through the point guard.
Kind of. But I feel like it's almost like when he's not at point guard is when this tends to happen.
Whenever he's playing more like a wing.
But when he plays well, they win. And when he struggles, they lose. Like, he is the most important player. When they have to... When Amori Hardy is the only ball handler that can create, like when Robotham's not playing well and he can't get in the lane at all, they're not good. Like, when Hardy's when they have to go to Amori Hardy and say, you're the only one that can do this, they're not as good. And when they have to have other guys hit threes, they struggle. So, few things he's take away from this. First, if you're an opposing coach, just double-team Robotham, you win the game. Game over.
Don't think that'll work.
I think it will. Just double-team him, you win. You can't get any assists.
Then it's literally just going to be Amori Hardy to Clyburn, reverse layup, reverse layup, reverse layup.
Nope, just double-team Robotham, game over. Second, it kind of sucks for UNLV in regards to Robotham, like, not being consistent, because, like, these are his point totals in Mountain West play. 11-8, 14-5, 13-11, 9-2-3, 21. He's all over the place. Like, he's only had, what, back-to-back games twice, or once, where he scored double digits. And, I mean, hell, he went 9-2-3 and then scored 21. It's absurd. So he's all over the place. Like, you don't have that consistent, like, okay, we're good when this guy scores, and you can't get him to consistently score because his shot's off a lot. Not ideal. Like, you'd like the guy that consistently is leading you to victories to be good every game.
But, I mean, it is a good example of the Mountain West being...
Yes, that everybody is like, yeah, he might... Their whole team's going to be terrible tonight, guys. Like, all right, guys, this is how we're going to win tonight. We're just going to play kind of average. They're going to suck. They're just going to be terrible tonight. And that works half the time in this conference. So that's why every game is decided by 45 points. And the third thing on Robotham, I go back to something Mike Grimala wrote about and said at the beginning of Mountain West play. And he sort of wrote, like, this year, is a year for UNLV to sort of prove they can compete in the Mountain West, because this roster is pretty much what's going to take them for the next two seasons. And, you know, you have Amori Hardy, Joel Tomboy, and Baki Zhang, maybe Turbo Beck, maybe Bryce Hamilton. Like, these are guys that are your core. You're going to add a couple freshmen to it next year. You do get your core Houston back, but this is sort of what you're looking at next year and probably even the year after that, unless they get a high-impact, high-rated recruit in that 2020 class. But this is what you're looking at. So you need to see, hey, can this core compete? And one of the things that Mike and I talked about, and it was on a pregame show early in the year, was Mike was like, if they can have a good season, like if they can go win 9 or 10 Mountain West games, and Amori Hardy and Joel Tomboy and Baki Zhang are the key pieces in that, you can be very optimistic about the future, because those guys are your young guys. They're going to be back next year. But if they get to 9 or 10 wins and it's with Noah Robotham and Chris Clyburn being the best players, it's not as optimistic. It's not as good for the future, because those guys are gone. And we talked about Clyburn earlier. He's a consistent volume scorer at the moment. He took 20 shots against Nevada. Like, he's taking a ton of shots. And Noah Robotham is the most important person to them winning. Like, that is, it's not great for the outlook of the future. Like, I love Hardy and Tomboy. I think both of those guys are good. I like what they do on the offensive end. But this team wins when Robotham's good. And this team is getting 15 shots a game from Chris Clyburn. You're going to have to replace those next year. And if this year's team can only get to 9 or 10 wins and then you lose, you know, the two most important players, is next year's team going to be any better? It feels like it'll be sort of status quo, because you'll just be playing catch up to fill in for those two guys. So we'll see. Now on to Fresno State. They're going to shoot so many threes. It's going to be glorious. They are, let's see, 47% of their shots are threes this year. Braxton Huggins has taken 150. New Williams, they have a guy whose first name is New. New Williams has taken 113. Deshaun Taylor has taken 90. And they're all 35% or better. They're 38% as a team. Well, they just chuck them up, and they still make 38% of them. They will have four shooters on the floor at all times. Their center, though, does not shoot threes. So, like, they're going to – they at all times, there'll be four shooters on the floor. There will never be five. There will never be three. It'll be four shooters on the floor. So that's good news for Mbaki Zhang. And honestly – the analysis of this game, it might simply be who makes more threes.
Oh, and see, my thoughts were, yeah, let them have the rim.
Well, yeah, but they like to shoot a bunch of threes. So, like, it honestly, like, this game might simply come down to which team makes more threes. Because Fresno State loves to shoot them. They'll make a lot. UNLV, when they're good, can make 14 threes in a game and shoot 40%. So it might simply be who gets to 14 threes first. That team wins. So just start chucking them up too. UNLV would be great. People are going to start yelling and complaining. Somebody tweeted at me last game that Steph Curry ruined basketball because teams shoot a bunch of threes. No, made it better. Threes are great. The concern for UNLV, Fresno State's better defensively than they are offensively. They actually limit your three-point attempts. They don't give up very many. And they're a very good defensive rebounding team. And to give you some context here, Fresno State...
It's what they'd have to guard in practice.
Fresno State's defense is 65th in the country in defensive efficiency. UNLV has played four teams that have top 100 defenses, and they have yet to score 1 point per possession against any of them. Cincinnati, Illinois, Nevada, Utah State, and they've all been at 0.96 points per possession or worse. And only one of those games, Utah State, did they hit more than 30% of their threes. So the smaller lineups, the spacing, the three-point shooting, I love it all. It hasn't been effective against the good defenses. So if the trends continue, UNLV's offense is going to struggle against this solid defense. But we'll see. Maybe they can beat a solid defense. This would be a bigger win than Boise State, too. Like, Fresno State's actually good this year. You can look at Boise State. They're 10-13, and you can make the argument they're not good either. I won't, because I think they're actually pretty decent. But Fresno State legitimately is the third-best team, maybe second-best team in the Mountain West. So this would chop down the asterisk talks if you can beat Fresno State. So yeah, UNLV Fresno State. It is Saturday. It's 2:00. Thomas and Mac. I think it'll be fun. I think Fresno State and Utah State, they're second and third in the conference. They've been good this year. I think they're both really fun to watch. They both like to shoot threes. They've got good spacing. Like, they're just fun teams to watch.
They twist on it.
They did.
They turned it around.
We should have thought of that.
We were so
around. It's still a stupid.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever.
Yeah, it's just
clever.
A little turnabout.
Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
All right, Jared is obsessed with the AAF. Are you obsessed? I'm making you obsessed with it. Just because you've shown some interest, so I have turned that into Jared is obsessed with the AAF.
I like CFL, too, so it's sort of one of those.
Yeah, you're useless. The Alliance of American Football. So Chrissy from Cofield & Company is going to be at, where is she going to be? Tap Sports Bar inside MGM Grand for the first games of the AAF. The San Diego Fleet, Jared's favorite team, taking on the San Antonio Commanders.
Woo!
3 o'clock, and it's free. Admission is free. So yeah, go watch the game with Chrissy.
And then, you know, after the game, we'll have her on Monday or Tuesday to break down the game.
See, I'm a little mad that we're getting the Raiders, simply because we would definitely have a team in this.
Yeah, exactly.
If the Raiders were coming, we would definitely have a team in this.
Yeah.
Be way more fun. But now you got to like latch onto the San Diego Fleet. It's ridiculous. I like Salt Lake City Stallions much better.
Oh, their logo is much better.
Is the best. Yeah. So 3 o'clock, go down there, see Chrissy, Tap Sports Bar inside MGM. All right, we're gonna help out Mark Davis. We're gonna help the Raiders find a home. What are you doing? Calm down. We got to set it up here. Just step on everybody. Since Mark Davis,
you took a long pause.
Yeah, calm down. Since Mark Davis hates Sam Boyd Stadium. And he's either going to have to go play for his Bay Area rival and pay them rent, or go play in the city that's suing him. We thought we would try to find better options for Mark Davis, better stadium options for the Raiders. So we're going to spin the wheel here.
With the NFL season only
4,200 hours
away, Technically Correct can exclusively report that the Raiders will play their 2019 season at
the 11,000-seat Thigh Fair Federal Credit Union Stadium in Houston, Texas. It'll be perfect for the Raiders because it only cost the taxpayers of Texas $80 million to build a high school football stadium, not $750 million.
I love when we do dumb stuff.
All right, we're giving away lights tickets.
Yes, we are.
How are we doing this?
You're going to put up a post on Facebook and Twitter. It'll be retweeted by the ESPN account. We are trying to make Eric Winalda laugh. So bring out the pitchforks. Bring out your best ribbings. Because when we have Eric Winalda in studio, we did something similar with Brett Lashbrook, but we're going to pick jokes, and those jokes that we tell him, whichever one makes him laugh, or whichever jokes we pick, those people will get lights tickets.
Okay. So Winalda will be in studio. We don't have a date yet next week, but we'll post this. Are we posting this today? Or later today. Should we wait till Monday? I feel like it might be better to do it on Monday.
I want to give people as much time as possible to come pick up the tickets.
But they won't get to pick them up till after we have Winalda on.
Yeah.
Because Winalda can disqualify him. I'm giving him the power. If we read him a joke and he's like, that's terrible, that person doesn't get tickets.
Okay. All right. Fine.
Be good here.
Fine.
I feel like we should post it on Monday. Like, I think Friday is like the worst day for social media interaction, isn't it?
I don't
really
know.
Go study our social media handbooks, Jared.
Yeah.
Okay. So we do have a lot. We have five pair?
Yeah.
So we have five pair. One of them is the grand prize, right, that has actual seats. The rest of them are supporter section, general admission.
I haven't looked at the tickets
this
time.
All right. Don't ignore everything I just said. That might be inaccurate. But yeah, so we'll read jokes to Eric Winalda. We'll see what makes him laugh.
They're it's $20, $25 value.
Yeah, those are the nice ones. Should I give away my tickets?
Want to make those the grand prize?
Yeah, actually, I got to figure out if my girlfriend's going. I won't be there. I'm not going to watch these nobodies play. Sign Steve Nash.
I swear to God, I'm breaking your glasses.